So a few weeks ago, in preparation for coming here tonight, I do what I generally do as a first step in preparing, which is I emailed Rich. And I said, Rich, what's the theme? It's sin these days. And I love it that there are themes in this community, because in a culture that is more and more what I call sound bites and random chunks of information, to just be able to take a theme, whatever it is, and explore it for several weeks, for a month, for a number of months. Even if you don't make it every time, maybe you listen to the other talks online, maybe you don't. But it has a continuity and a power that isn't just interesting and helpful for progression on our spiritual path. It's actually countercultural. It's directly in the face of yet another random soundbite of interesting information. And we can approach our Dharma practice that way, but we can also approach it other ways. So I emailed Rich and I said, what's the theme? What should I give a talk on? And the answer was real short this time. It came back, you should give a talk on your favorite sutta. I love it. I've been thinking of you all month, every Thursday night, hearing, reflecting, exploring on somebody's favorite sutta. So I have to say, Rich, it led to an extreme amount of papancha on my part. Those who are not familiar with this wonderful Pali word, papancha, means mental proliferation, which basically means we receive a piece of information, or we hear a sound, or we see a sight, and we're off, and we're thinking about this, that, and the other thing, and it goes very, very far before we realize I am in papancha. So my papancha journey included the first response of, how cool, what a great theme, my favorite sutta, followed by, what is my favorite sutta? Followed by endless ruminations on all my favorite suttas, which I will not bore you with the details of. However, some interesting things came out of that once I got past the papancha and into the reflection. And that's an interesting one, because we can think about it and kind of be reactive and unconscious and follow the same old habit patterns our minds always do. Or we can say, oh, the mind is very active about this. Let's use it as a reflection. Bring in a little bit more awareness, slow down the process, open to the mystery of things. So one of the things that I learned from that was, firstly, no surprise, it doesn't matter what my favorite sutta is. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what your favorite sutta is, in terms of actually what it is. What matters is what inspires us. What matters is, are there themes in the teachings of the Buddha that capture our interest or our inspiration? So I started to notice things like, well, I'm very inspired and fascinated by the life story of the Buddha, the way it was conveyed in the suttas. I remembered that a theme that is of great interest to me and has been for many, many years in the teachings of the Buddha are specifically the teachings that the Buddha gave his son, Rahula. Because while on one hand all are the same in the eyes of the Buddha, on the other hand this is his kid. And I'm super interested, what did the Buddha say to his kid? So I almost brought one of those. Almost. But then I realized that I loved those suttas so much that I actually want to bring them as a whole day long of exploration. And I've done this before, particularly with the teachings that the Buddha gave his son. I've done whole day longs on them. And so I thought, oh. So that track started going off in a different direction. And then I said, okay, back to Thursday night, January 28th. I'm really interested in some of the suttas that describe the Buddha's interventions in political matters, particularly matters of water rights. We might think that here in California, hopefully, fingers crossed, at the end of this drought or moving out of this drought, that we know something about water rights, and we do. But the issue of water rights has been going on for a long time. The Buddha actually stepped in several times to try to prevent wars over water rights. I'm interested in those kind of dialogues and teachings. But being that it's January, and for the last decade, just about decade, January, one of the places that I go is Spirit Rock Meditation Center and teach a week-long retreat with Sylvia Boorstein and others on loving kindness or metta. I went back to my old standby, which is the Metta Sutta. So that is what we will explore tonight. However, I have a feeling that there will be other suttas woven into this one because, well, my mind got involved in Papancha. So let's take some of the energy and use it skillfully, right? Because when we think all those stories, we're using a lot of energy in the mind. And that energy can be redirected to clarity, to appropriate response, and to skillfulness. We gather the same energy that's just weaving that story on and on and on. What's yours? What's yours this week? It's about your family, your job, that house project, and it just goes on and on and on. See if we can corral some of that energy and move it in a different direction. So where are we going to start with this? I think we're going to start with this with the Buddhist bedtime story. A story that I've told many times before and a story that I've told here. So I'll try to keep it brief. But it's important to note that the suttas were were actual circumstances that happened at the time of the Buddha that was passed from mouth to ear for hundreds of years. So that means, of course, that what we have translated from numerous different languages since then into English is not the exact words of the Buddha. And for some people, that's frustrating, or they try to figure it out. And for me, it's really freeing. Because what I figure is that we're looking in these suttas for themes. We're looking in these suttas for repetition. Ah, that was said before. Clearly, that was something that was held and passed, and maybe it was plugged in over here and plugged in over there, and maybe it started there, maybe it didn't, but maybe there's something important here to explore, to be revealed. And so many of the suttas that I know by heart actually learned that way, and I learned many of them through chanting, spending time with the monastics in our tradition. And many of the direct teachings of the Buddha and the suttas have been put into chants. And they're really easy to learn. They usually have three notes. So, like the Metta Sutta, we'll get there. We'll get there. We won't chant the Metta Sutta. And I really would have brought copies of the Metta Sutta. But in fact, all the copies that I had actually did not come back with me from Spirit Rock, and so they're still there. So I apologize for that. It was my intention to have Metta Sutta copies. How many of you know the Metta Sutta? Yeah, you can do this. Sort of. So Metta, I bet there's some people here who are really new to meditation. Metta is the Pali word for loving kindness. At least that's how the word was translated from the old language Pali into Old English. As we are retranslating these teachings into modern English with better translations, we're discovering that words like friendliness, benevolence, goodwill are actually clearer or more precise translations of this word that we've been told is loving kindness. So again, how do I hold that? I go, oh, flavors. When loving kindness feels like a really high bar for that one over there that I can't stand, how about just basic friendliness? That might be available. So we get to these stories and they're passed down person to person. They get put into story form. And every single teaching has a background story. They don't just happen in a void. They happen in a location, which is often named in the sutta, although not so much this one. There are different characters or players involved in each of these stories, each of these teachings. So for the Metta Sutta, what's been passed down to us and I really think of it as a Buddhist bedtime story, is that it was time for Rain's retreat in India 2,500 or so years ago. And a group of monks was planning to train in concentration practice, focus and collect their minds. And their teacher, the Buddha, can you imagine? gave them instructions in concentration and sent them off on their retreat. They went up into the foothills of the Himalayas. The foothills of the Himalayas are 8,000 feet, just to give some perspective. High mountains. And they found a place that was conducive for their retreat. There was a beautiful forest. There was a village nearby that was friendly to people on the spiritual path that said that they would offer them food and even built them little kutis or cabins. They thought, ah, this is just like Spirit Rock Meditation Center. Totally kidding. But it is hysterical when all these years of teaching the Metta retreat at Spirit Rock Meditation Center, which is really, the United States of America 2016 conditions are ideal. And yet, there's always something. And in fact, there was for these monks. And so they had the ideal place, the ideal conditions, the perfect teacher, and really good instructions. And they started to meditate, and everything's going great. Until, dun dun dun. What they didn't know, of course, was that there were unseen beings living in these woods. Buddhist tradition, they're called devas. In Western tradition, we might call them angels. You don't have to believe in any of that. You just hold it as unseen benevolent forces. We know that there is more in this world than our eyeball can comprehend. That's all we need to know. So the devas were fine having house guests. You know, like when you have Thanksgiving house guests and they stay for an extra 2 weeks? It was like that for the devas. And so they started coming up with strategies to kind of make sure that the monks would leave. So they tried all these strategies. They tried things like scaring them, making sounds in the forest, which didn't work. And they produced stinky smells to try to, stink them out, and that didn't work. They produced frightening images in the minds of these monks. That worked. You ever been meditating, minding your own business, and then something scary arises in your mind, and you think, why did I come to the sim to meditate on a Thursday night? I could be at the movies. It's like that. Anyway, so they ran down the hill, and they found their teacher, the Buddha, and said, it's the wrong place, it's the wrong time, it's the wrong instructions, we're totally scared, and we want to break our retreat. And of course we know, from this Buddhist bedtime story, that the Buddha said, friends, that's the perfect place to practice. It's the perfect time. All conditions are ideal, and have I got a practice for you, loving kindness? This is what should be done by those who are skilled in goodness and who know the path of peace. Here's the three-tone version. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech. See? Three tones. Easy. Humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature, let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. And the teaching moves on from there. And reassured, the monks went back up to the mountain. Total transformation, because they were extending the concentrated mind heart of loving kindness, and the very things that became the were the problems to their retreat, those devas, became their allies and protected their retreat. And I love to say that we can do that with our own minds, that our very defenses that feel so difficult to bear now, 30 years after the fact, actually got developed to protect us at times when we didn't have other tools. Can we see them as an ally? Can we allow them to support our practice without running our lives? So each of these teachings, each of these suttas, has the possibility of being translated to here and now, what we're dealing with here and now. And that's one way of holding that. Last year, Is it last year? Yeah.
I got super excited about the Metta Sutta.
And I'm sure that a few of you are aware that there are many translations of this sutta. There are actually 18 main translations and even more commentaries. And so I decided for the Metta Retreat at Spirit Rock last year that I would do two hour long talks on the whole Metta Sutta and really do some further research than I've done before. I've been practicing and studying with it for many years, but I thought, let's take it a step deeper. Again, these suttas can invite us to take a step deeper, even if we know them. Well, let me put it this way. When I was in my 20s, I took a year and studied the middle length discourses of the Buddha, which is like 2,000 pages. And I worked with a teacher and I studied it, and it was amazing. 5 years later, I discovered that as practice progresses, well, I actually thought that it was pointless that I'd even read the suttas because my understanding was so different. I felt like I had to study them all again, and I was frustrated. But in fact, that was wrong understanding, because it was just an opportunity to read or hear about the same teachings with different eyes. And then 5 years later, it's the same. And 5 years later, it's the same. So I think I studied about 7 of the translations and 4 main commentaries, and I won't bore you with the details of that, but if you really are interested, I'll give you all my resources if you come up at the end. And put together kind of some teachings. So I thought I'd riff off them a little bit tonight. It's interesting, you know, you guys we don't have like a table here for my notes. So what that means is that A, you get a lot more improv from me, and B, that it's more messy because I'm not using my notes. And it's not good or bad, but it's amusing to me. I thought, oh, so how's it going to sound without the notes? Because I can't see them. So, broad brushstrokes, right? The first part of that sutta that I just said out loud is the part of the teaching that points to the celebration, the acknowledgement of our basic integrity. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. And it talks about being able and upright and wise speech and contented and humble and different qualities that shine forth out of our basic integrity. Those qualities also shine forth when we come together in communities like this. Sometimes it feels like, oh, I'm going to community sit and I've got to put my best face on. I got to make sure to not say that thing I always say everywhere else. But other times it really does feel like our basic integrity has room to flower when we're here together. It's a beautiful thing. So I mainly want to focus on the middle part of the sutta. But I'm just looking here at this beautiful bush. Do you know what this bush is up front here?
It's pink.
It's pink. It's a heather bush. And somebody kindly tonight, thank you, gave me this heather bush. And it's so sweet. You know, I really, when I was growing up as a kid, my family planted me a heather bush in my backyard, and it grew up as I grew up, and it got quite large, and I haven't had one since then. And so I'm really touched by this gift, actually. And I will confess that at one point during the meditation, the thought crossed my mind, huh, now I live in the foothills. I wonder if it's too cold outside for this heather bush. Okay, so if you're wondering if random thoughts pass through my mind in meditation, they do. And we're not meditating to give ourselves a lobotomy. We're meditating to be able to first recognize that thinking happens. Second, recognize the process of thinking. So getting so consumed in the content of the thoughts. And thirdly, develop a friendly, wise, skillful relationship with the thinking. So when I had the thought, uh-oh, I wonder if that plant is going to die in my backyard, I smiled to myself and said, oh, caring. That was what was fueling the thought, caring. I care about this plant not dying. Okay? That's a totally different relationship than just than planning, I don't know, some greenhouse that I have to build for this thing or something. That's different. Okay? So I'm going to use the Heather gift, the Heather Bush gift, as the example for basic integrity. When the mind is clear and open, when the heart is warm and friendly and available, when impulses arise like, huh, well, I don't know if this is going to work as an example, we'll see. Huh, Heather's coming to Thursday night at Sim. Huh, I have this Heather bush. Maybe I could give the Heather bush to Heather. Okay? We have the impulse, we're aware of the impulse, we act on the impulse, and we delight in the gesture of generosity. Now, this is an example or an expression of when our basic integrity is in alignment. Because how many times do we think of something beautiful to do for somebody? It doesn't have to be a gift. We think of something beautiful to do for somebody, and then the thought comes in, too busy, too tired, too annoying, too something. And it doesn't manifest. So it's one of the reasons why we cultivate these environments of mind. I mean, think of metta and compassion, gratitude, equanimity, as environments of mind out of which our thoughts, words, and actions can shine forth. They're available when the mind isn't startled or angry or confused, and we can also cultivate them, and we do. So, I will delight in the heather bush. Then we get to the next part of the sutta, and instead of doing it in three-note chant, I'm going to share something a little bit more exciting, which was written by my friend and colleague Kevin Griffin. Does Kevin Griffin ever come here?
His book sure has, though.
Yeah, so, Kevin Griffin is best known as one of the pioneers of Buddhism and 12-step work, and he really is a master teacher, especially of that modality. He is also a professional musician. And so he took the Metta Sutta and said three notes, and how about the Metta Samba? So I won't make you sing this Metta Samba because, you know, not everybody can Metta Samba. But so I'll sing the next part in the Metta Samba style. And this is really the part about how we wish well and to whom. So it goes like this. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be. Whether they are weak or strong, omitting not a single one, the great, the mighty, medium, short, or small. The seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease, at ease, at ease. May they be at ease. You feel that? That's metta. Okay. It's passionate. It's ardent. It's full. If I don't take deep breaths when I sing that, it's going to be a disaster. Okay? So instead of believing me, let's do the last line together, okay? Call and response. I'm on a roll tonight. You know, forgive me. If you come back when I'm here in May, I promise we won't sing. Okay, so May all beings be at ease. Okay. I'll sing it, you sing it. May all beings be at ease.
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 Together, may all
beings be at ease.
Of the Buddha. Friends, I know you're freaking out about your retreat space. That's how they'd say it in modern English if the Buddha was here now. Friends, I know you're freaking out about your retreat space. I know it's hard up there. I know you're giving it everything you got. Maybe the Buddha would say something like, I love you, keep going. Here's some instructions to support you. Well, I don't know what he would say. But we do know. We know in our hearts because we have Buddha-ness in here. You know, yes, we're inspired by the historical Buddha, but it's not separate from us. Because in the field of loving kindness, in the field of the Metta Sutta, it's not separate. It's separate in a healthy way. So that when you're drowning in your stuff, I don't have to drown with you. Okay. And then on another level, we're all in this together. And we take turns. Some of us drowned, and then others of us drowned, and some of us pick ourselves up, and then others of us pick ourselves up, and some of us help someone else up, and then someone else helps someone else up, and we're all just taking turns. Whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, seen or the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born. May all beings be at ease. So this doesn't mean that all beings are going to be at ease all the time. We're not at ease all the time. May we be at ease more often. But what it is pointing to is the possibility that within the difficulties of life, acknowledging that being a human being living a life is not easy, okay, that we can bring ease internally to that which is difficult in our minds, in our bodies, in our families, in this world. That's possible. Not all the time, but more and more and more. And so when I train people in loving kindness for all beings, and we can do it formally, we can do it informally, a question often comes up, well, how? Question comes up, how's the heart that big to include all beings? I mean, how many beings is that anyway? Depends on how expansive you want to get. We're including the animal world, so it's way more than 7 billion. And to really hold it as an archetype, as the environment of mind and heart that is friendly, caring, connected. So that it's less about how many are there and can I wish them all well and I'm too small and I can't handle it. I get it. These bodies, they're small and they're fragile and they can't actually bear the horror of the planet, not just at this time, but any time. They're too small and fragile. Look how small they are. It's amazing that they work at all. I wake up in gratitude every day. Wow, another morning, another breath. Everything's functioning more or less. And it's definitely more or less, right? Can we extend friendliness to that? So how does it work? A lot of it's thematic. It's holding experiences, people, and groups with friendliness. Right? So a lot of people like to send metta to all beings while they're driving. And you think, well, I don't pass all beings while I'm driving. But this is an example. I mean, yes, you do, archetypally. Not literally, but archetypally. But maybe you say, oh, all beings that are driving right now, well, may they get there safely. And then you say to yourself, oh, all beings that aren't driving right now, may they be at ease. And so you start to thematic kind of thematic it out, right? Sometimes I wake up in the morning and I think to myself, you know, everyone that's waking up right now may be well and happy. Then I think everyone that's sleeping right now may be well and happy. So you kind of like hold the archetype, because when we move from the individuals into the archetypes, then we're not talking about so much about the confines of these small, fragile bodies anymore. But we're really bringing it into the mind-heart. And the mind-heart don't have a location. This is not the mind. This is the brain. This is not the heart I'm talking about. This is the beating heart. The citta, the mind-heart, is as vast as it needs to be because it doesn't have a location. It doesn't have boundaries. How many of you have phrases of well-wishing that you send to yourself and others? I'm just curious. Oh, how lovely. So let's build the field of metta in the hall and have some of us call out our favorite wish that we send to ourselves or others, and we'll call out the wish with "may we." So like one of my favorite ones is, "may we be well and happy." What else?
May we be safe and protected.
Mm-hmm. May we be at peace.
And loving kindness.
May we be happy.
May we be at peace and at ease.
May we be helpful.
May we speak from our hearts with respect.
May we be filled with loving kindness.
May we be contented and satisfied.
May we live with an open heart.
May we engage the world with ease.
May we be able to take care of each other.
May we be free of suffering.
It's so beautiful. So just take a breath and breathe it in. Those aren't just words. They're invitations. And there's two things going on there when we say our favorite wishes. One is the words. Okay? They inspire hearts. They perhaps drop us into a slightly different place. But here's the other thing going on. The other thing is not the specific words, not the may, we, whatever. It's the murmur. It's what I call the murmur. The murmur isn't about the words. It happened here. A whole bunch of people said it at once. You couldn't hear the actual words. What you heard, what you felt, what you sensed was the murmur. And that murmur is something that this planet really needs, not just right now, but always. And that murmur is connecting with groups of people and individuals all over the planet, in hundreds of languages, in dozens of faiths. And they're all saying the same thing. They're saying, we're connected. They're saying, we care. They're saying, we're extending our hearts. They're saying, may there be peace. So thank you for adding to the murmur. I know you thought you came here tonight for yourself, but too late. The planet's already benefiting. So let's move a little further in the sutta here. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none, through anger or ill will, wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish every single living being, radiating kindness over the entire world. spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths. Outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. One should sustain this recollection. We don't need to have a child to know. Some of us are parents, some of us are step-parents, some of us are godparents. We don't need to have a child to know. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, it's that impulse in us . When I was 18 years old, I actually already had my own classroom. I've been teaching for a long time. This classroom was pre-K. And we were taking a little walk to a local garden one day, one beautiful summer day. And it was too long ago. I really don't remember the exact details anymore of the whys of it. Man, the whys don't really matter. The bottom line was one of these precious little four-year-olds suddenly kind of bounced off the sidewalk into the path of an oncoming car. And it was instantaneous. It was like the child's feet hadn't even hit the asphalt before I'd grabbed that child, totally throwing out my back. Took 6 months to recover. It's that impulse. And it doesn't have to be something that dramatic. But again, it ties in with the first part of the sutta that's about our basic integrity. The part of the sutta we're in now is actually the how-to of the meditative path the Buddha taught. We don't actually, the training that, it's like if you come to the metta retreat at Spirit Rock or you come to a loving kindness day long, this whole thing with phrases and who we wish well to, this developed hundreds of years later. By a commentator, a monastic called Buddhaghosa. What we know about the Buddha teaching metta is in this sutta, and then another sutta. Aha! See if I can remember this one. I will abide radiating one quarter of the mind with loving kindness. Likewise the second, likewise the third, likewise the fourth, so above and below and around and everywhere, and to all as to myself, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, without hostility and without ill will. Okay. So we have those instructions, clearing the mind of hostility and ill will on one side, and filling the mind with loving kindness on the other side. So the instructions are kind of vague. And so commentators have developed systems and codified them and said this is the real way. And you know, they're great systems and they're great ways. We know that this radiating quality is very important. So a question to ask, how do you experience, or not, the radiating quality of friendliness? Maybe it's not that you've put your body on the line for a child. Maybe it's somebody's extended themselves that way for you. When you've been in a moment of distress. Maybe it wasn't extreme distress like in the path of an oncoming car. No, but you needed a little bit of extension of friendliness and the protection that that offers so that we don't feel alone in the difficult moments. We don't feel isolated. Maybe it's like that. How do you experience this radiating quality? Do you? For some people, it's at the level of theoretical, which is fine. No, we need to understand the theory so that we can directly practice, so that we can understand. That's one way of talking about the progression. So we know the theory, we reflect, we practice, and we directly understand. For some people, it's somatic. It's actually feeling the warmth and friendliness moving out from the body. Some people, it's the core of the body. Some people, it's the whole body, and just spreading out in all directions. For some people, it's more internal visualizing, which is part of the loving kindness training as it's been developed out of the commentaries. Yeah? So I'll give you an example. It has nothing to do with meditation. But not every morning, but a fair amount of mornings, I wake up, and one of the early thoughts that I have is about a body of water that not only have I never been to, but I don't know the name of. And I thought about looking up the name of the body of water for this talk, because we seem to live in this information age where you should know the name of the body of the water. And I just realized I could care less what the name of this body of water is. The label is not the visceral feeling that I get when I wake up and I think of this body of water. So why am I waking up and thinking about a body of water, you might ask? Thinking about the body of water between Turkey and Greece. And the thought that passes through my mind is, I wonder what the weather is there. And the reason that thought passes through my mind is because the weather today there impacts how many people make it across. Okay? So what's happening there? I'm giving you some particulars that arise in my mind upon occasion, but underneath the particulars are the fact that we can wake up in the morning instead of waking up and going, ugh. Okay? Now, if you wake up in the morning and go, bring friendliness to that. That's metta. But we can also wake up in the morning and extend beyond our limited, kind of self-centered me and my day and think a little bigger and extend wishes of safety and ease and physical well-being to those that we'll never meet. It's a possibility. So upwards to the sky and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down. So the invitation from the sutta is in all postures, all activities, which ties into yet another famous sutta called the Satipatthana Sutta, or the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, which has a subsection about the importance of practicing mindfulness, sitting, standing, walking, and lying down. So then we bring these two together and we go, oh, this is important. It's not just basic mindfulness, but the environment of mind of kindness within that mindfulness. And so I feel quite passionate about the interweaving of metta and mindfulness. A mature mindfulness has a tremendous amount of benevolence, friendliness, caring. And a mature metta has a lot of mindfulness. Mm-hmm. It has to. Otherwise, there's no awareness. Somebody 1 year at the metta retreat had a little bit too much metta and not quite enough mindfulness, and they got their lunch, and they were eating outside, and they put it down, I guess, on a bench near where they were going to sit, and they sat on it. Okay? That's too much metta, not enough mindfulness. Mature metta has a lot of mindfulness. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. That's the wisdom section of the sutta. So the first part is integrity, the second part is meditation and training, the third part is wisdom, which of course ties in with the Eightfold Path of Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. Integrity, meditation, and wisdom. Those last four lines historically been my favorite part of the sutta. They just totally inspired me to the possibility of full awakening. Then later, many years after I first heard the sutta, there started to be some writing in mainstream Buddhist magazines and other places that this last part of the sutta may have been added later. And a lot of discussion and arguments about that. Was it what the Buddha said at that particular time? Was it added later? Was it added by the Buddha? Was it added by some other monk? And at first I was so disappointed because of my favorite part of my favorite sutta. And then I thought, no, that's not it. That's not it. Because it doesn't actually matter. If I'm a scholar, if I've got my scholar sense of self in the foreground, it matters. But as a practitioner on the spiritual path, it really doesn't matter. What matters is it inspiring or not? So with all your sutta exploration, just, you know, lead in the side of inspiring. Follow your nose. What themes bring up your interest? Maybe it's not water rights. Maybe it's something else. And follow that. When you're listening to teachings from people here and they're dropping in sutta this and sutta that, notice which ones capture your interest and inspire you and follow those. Don't worry about the rest of them because, you know, the Majjhima Nikaya, 2,000 pages, is just one of many. So there's endless amounts of opportunity to be inspired, to be interested, to learn, to directly see and understand. Well, I didn't use any of my notes. I wonder if there's anything interesting here. I guess not. If you ever want to hear a formal Dharma talk, just give me a table. But I enjoy improvising with you guys, I really do, so don't. I'm not actually asking for a table. I'm just making a joke. It's just funny, though, causes and conditions. It's like our whole lives, our whole spiritual path is just a whole bunch of different causes and conditions coming together. Things as simple as if there was a higher table, it would have been a different talk. It doesn't really matter in the end. That's just the content. It's the understanding of seeing due to causes, things go this way and that way. And actually, the relationship that I develop with you all is different because I don't have a table and notes. And that's it. The story isn't the point. It's just interesting to see how the smallest little thing affects so much. And that's why metta. That's why these qualities of heart need to, as much as possible, imbue our minds. Because everything is connected with everything. And little things matter. So maybe we will end with some sort of metta chant. Do you want a more formal chant, or do you want more of like a lullaby song? Your choice.
Both.
I love it. But it's that I want more culture. Truth of the matter is, I'll be totally transparent. I would love both too. So, since we're here, both. So the first one's more formal. We'll chant it 9 times, and then the second one. You literally will sing on the way home, which is so much better than cursing at the other drivers. So the first one, they're both in Pali. Don't worry, you'll get it. Sabbe Sattā Sukhi Hontu. What it means is all beings, may all beings be happy. Okay, simple translation of it. So we'll just say it a few times. Sabbe
Sattā
Sukhi
Sukhi
Hontu
Hontu.
Sabe.
Sabe.
Sata.
Sata.
Suki.
Suki.
Hontu.
Hontu.
Okay, so the lullaby is actually the four divine abodes. So the places that our heart and mind abide when we're not startled or angry or confused. And they are, of course, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. But in the Pali, they are metta, karuna, mudita, upeka. You want to try that out for size?
Yeah.
Metta, karuna,
mudita,
upeka. So we'll sing that enough, you'll get it. So we'll start with May All Beings Be Happy 9 times. And if you love to sing and you carry harmony, that kind of harmony is also welcome here. So I like to chant with my hands in front of my heart. You certainly don't have to. The reason that I do is it brings awareness to the heart center and also the breath center to take some deeper breaths with chanting. So we're taking a deep breath in. Sabe sata sugi hontu. Sabe sata sugi hontu. Sabe sata sugi hontu. Sabe.
Upeka,
Metta.
Thank you for your practice and your presence here.